And from the KTOO newsroom, this is Yvonne Crumry. The U.S. Forest Service is updating its management plan for fighting invasive plants on 3.7 million acres in southeast Alaska. The draft plan is nearing the end of its public review process, and the federal agency hopes to have it ready for the spring season. KFSK's Angela Denning reports from Petersburg.
National forests often deal with hundreds, if not thousands, of different invasive plant species that compete with the indigenous landscape. But it's different on the rainforest in southeast Alaska.
We're really lucky compared to the rest of the United States. We're in a much different position here, which is really great to make some headway.
Carrie Case is with the Forest Service in Petersburg. She says most of the forest's nearly 17 million acres remains indigenous. Case is the project leader for updating the agency's 2013 invasive management plan for the Petersburg and Wrangell Ranger Districts. 89 invasive plant species have been identified there, but only a handful are considered a real threat for ecological reasons, namely knotweed, hawkweed, and reed canarygrass. The new Forest Service plan would allow workers more options, like expanding how herbicides can be sprayed. Joni Johnson is a botanist with the Petersburg Ranger District.
They're not big changes necessarily. They're the same chemicals, but it provides more tools.
The proposal would eliminate annual treatment limits and allow treatments below the high water mark or on plants rooted in the water. Take reed canarygrass, for example. It's found in many places on the national forest, but botanists are mainly concerned about controlling it along riparian areas or the banks of waterways like the Stikine River.
It can, basically form these dense thickets, and it can outcompete native plants. Nothing else will grow there.
The root bed of reed canarygrass can even change the physical processes in certain areas.
You don't see erosion occurring where you would normally see erosion occurring, and so it changes the meandering of the stream.
The Forest Service uses herbicides to combat the grass, which Johnson says is 60 to 80% effective. Spraying happens by hand, with a worker wearing a backpack of the chemicals and holding a wand. However, the management plan from 2013 only allows for spot spraying a part of one plant at a time. The proposed update would allow workers to continuously spray multiple plants in some situations. Again, Carrie Case.
Instead of just spraying and then stopping and spraying and stopping in small areas, you can, if you have a continuous coverage, you can just kind of, you can keep applying, which we weren't able to do before. And there are places where it's much more effective for us to be able to have that option.
Every treatment must be planned out because it can't be done in the rain, which in a rainforest is rare. Johnson says she can sometimes count on her hands the number of opportunities she has to use the herbicides in a year. Still, some environmental groups and several individuals have opposed the use of herbicides because of health concerns for native plants and animals, as well as humans. The season for invasive plant field work runs from late May to early October, depending on the species. Knotweed is another invasive plant of great concern. It looks like a nice hedge bush with lots of green leaves and bamboo-like stalks. It's growing in multiple places in Petersburg and other southeast towns. But it outcompetes almost everything, even the hardy salmonberry bush, because of its aggressive rhizome root system. Johnson says it's very, very hard to kill.
You don't want to dig it up because it just stimulates growth, and it's a bugger.
Instead, you can suppress knotweed with herbicides and smothering it with tarps. Because it grows mostly in urban areas, the Forest Service's new plan would allow working on non-forestry lands with other partners like tribal groups. The federal plan won't be finalized until at least mid-May, after public objection and response periods have ended. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
You can find links to the draft plan on kfsk.org and see photos of knotweed and reed canarygrass there. If you have questions about invasive species, contact a Forest Service office near you. The Alaska Marine Highway System says it's resuming ferry links to Prince Rupert, British Columbia, this summer for the first time since 2019. The state ferry system announced on Monday that reservations are now open for the roughly 110-mile route connecting Ketchikan and the North American road system from June through September. The last ferry between Alaska and Canada on the route sailed more than 2 years ago. That's when a dispute over whether a U.S. border guards would be allowed to carry sidearms on Canadian soil led authorities to pause sailings. Then the pandemic hit, and Canada closed its border to all but essential travel. But now a U.S.-Canada agreement allows U.S. border agents to be armed, and the Canadian border has reopened to visitors. The first voyage from Ketchikan to Prince Rupert is set for June 20th, with a return trip the following day. The Marine Highway System says it expects the Matanuska to sail to and from Prince Rupert twice a month through September, tickets starting at $69 per passenger. A ballot measure to decide whether to turn Skagway's medical clinic over to a regional tribal health consortium could go before voters later this year. That's following a 4-2 vote last week by the Skagway Assembly, which has been negotiating with SEARCH, the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, to take over health care in the community. KHNS's Mike Swayze reports.
It was near midnight on Thursday when Skagway's Assembly came out of executive session, and they quickly got to the business of addressing what many see as a crisis in the community-owned health clinic that's been plagued by high turnover in medical staff and leadership. Assemblyperson Orion Hansen brought the motion to the table to put the sale of all Dahl Memorial Clinic properties, including the building, land, and assets, to the Regional Tribal Health Organization for a public vote.
SEARCH seems to be kind of an all-or-nothing proposition. They're only interested now if they can own the building and the land and all the assets and not lease it. I was hopeful there would be some sort of opportunity for a honeymoon period to see if it's a good fit for Skagway. Apparently, SEARCH is not interested in that.
Hansen is one of those people who thinks the clinic is in crisis. There are currently 5 open permanent positions advertised on the municipal website and 2 temporary spots. The clinic only employs 16 full-time staff. 2 of the open positions include a nurse practitioner and executive director. Recently, a long-serving registered nurse resigned, and the interim executive director is no longer involved in day-to-day activities.
I take responsibility. I think everybody on this assembly takes responsibility for the shortfallings of the clinic, because every 2 weeks we approve the check run, and a significant portion of that check run is clinic-related. I know it's a great source of pride for the community that they own that building, and I feel that as well. I did not feel great about having to make that motion to have it on the ballot of selling the clinic, but I don't know what options we have.
The motion passed with 4 votes for and 2 votes against. Assemblyperson Jay Burnham was one of the pair of no votes.
I didn't quite have enough information to feel comfortable sending it to the voters. And also, I don't know if it would really be a popular thing, and I would hate to waste more time with putting it out to a vote.
The other no vote came from Assemblyperson Sam Bass, who told KHNS in a written statement that he wanted more time to consider the idea of including the building and land in the deal with SEARCH. Previously, talks with SEARCH had contained the possibility of leasing the property from the municipality. The next step the Assembly took was to direct the mayor to nominate 2 members of the Assembly to serve on the volunteer-based 9-member clinic board of directors. That board makes the bulk of staffing decisions for the clinic. The motion passed unanimously. Hansen says this step was taken as a means to help streamline meetings and add people to the board that feel the same sense of urgency expressed to the Assembly by their constituents.
I think our feeling on the assembly is that a lot of changes needed to be made. We've hoped and been patient and waited to see how that would come about, and it doesn't seem to be changing.
Next, Skagway's mayor will make the nominations, then the assembly will confirm them. Additionally, 2 spots on the clinic board will have to open up to make room for the new additions. That will either come from resignations or by the assembly rescinding appointments. That's still being worked out. There is no formal word on when the ballot measure to sell the Dahl Memorial Clinic to SEARCH would go to Skagway voters. Hansen thinks it could be as early as July or as late as October during municipal elections. Reporting from Skagway, I'm Mike Swayze.
Today, the state reported another 35 new cases for Juneau. Those are the total new cases from the past 2 days, but this number doesn't include results from today or home tests. 8 Bartlett Regional Hospital staff members are out due to illness from the virus. There is currently 1 patient being treated for COVID-19 at the hospital. Statewide, another 463 Alaskans and visitors to the state have tested positive since Friday, which again doesn't include results from today or home tests. There are currently 66 people being treated for COVID in hospitals around the state. This is KTOO.